This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Welcome to Rad Voices. Rad Voices is a monthly series here on the Lynn Williams Activist Toolkit, where activists tell their own stories. This show is made possible through a CKLM Legacy Grant. Rad Voices is produced on traditional unceded Mississauga territory in Toronto. I'm Steph Pinch. This month, I spoke with Julie Lalonde. Julie has been a feminist organizer for almost a decade. She led the now infamous fight for a student-run sexual assault center at Carleton University. She's still involved in helping run the peer sexual assault line created by the Coalition for a Sexual Assault Center, alongside the university-funded sexual assault center finally granted in September 2013. She was co-chair for the Ottawa chapter of the Miss G Project and a founder of the Radical Handmaids, DrawTheLine.ca, and the Ottawa chapter of Hollaback. She continues to speak out for reproductive justice and against sexual assault through her freelance writing and community radio show, The Third Wave. I spoke with her in Ottawa via Skype.
My name is Julie Lalonde, and I'm a social justice activist originally from Northern Ontario, come from a very working class background, but I am currently based in Ottawa, and I do work mostly in the area of violence against women and specifically sexual violence, but I also do some work around reproductive justice and access to abortion. Going to university, I'm the first person in my family to access university. And so I moved to Ottawa with the express purpose of not just getting a degree, but doing something with it in terms of making the world a better place, as sort of cliched as that sounds. And in my first years of university, I realized that I would work, I would go to school, and I would focus solely on myself. And I felt like I had to give back. And so that's when I first started getting involved volunteering with young girls. And it turns out young marginalized girls, young women of color, impoverished, and just sort of doing some role modeling and some self-esteem work with them. But I come from a family of people for whom activism is a deep, deep part of who we are. My paternal grandmother was the first woman to be hired as a laborer in the Inco mines. My maternal grandmother became disabled in her late 50s and then went on to fight for accessibility for people with disabilities in rural areas. So I have a really hard time separating my first experiences as an activist from my family history because I feel like they're so intertwined. The first real activist thing that I did was joining the Miss G Project, which was a group dedicated to getting women and gender studies into the Ontario high school curriculum. And I co-chaired the Ottawa chapter of the Miss G Project, and that was really amazing work. And my first real taking something on and making it my own would be creating the Coalition for a Carleton Sexual Assault Center, which in 2007 seemed like a really quick idea to get a sexual assault center at Carleton University after a very high-profile sexual assault on campus. And it turned into a 7-year-long battle that only ended this past fall, so September of 2013. And I learned a great deal. And in that process, I realized, you know what? Fighting for accountability and fighting for the voices of survivors of sexual violence is what I was put on this earth to do. What I always try to tell people whenever I talk about doing work with the Coalition for Carleton Sexual Assault Center is that it took 7 years to get a sexual assault center at Carleton, and that's in no way, shape, or form a reflection of the students at Carleton's campus. We had almost unanimous support from all student groups and student bodies on campus the entire length of our battle. Our struggles and the barriers came 100% from the administration. So we're talking about an institution that is driven by enrollment rates and retention rates, and who are also subscribing to really archaic ideas of sexual assault and violence against women, which is, if I talk about it, then I acknowledge that it's happening, and therefore I'm advertising that you shouldn't come here because it's not safe. So they came up with every excuse they could imagine, from we have no money to we have no space to there is no need to the type of services you're demanding we already offer in another form. The president threatened to sue me in 2009. I mean, it was just hideous, quite frankly. It was a really ugly, ugly battle, and it didn't need to be that way. I am very much motivated by practicality. One of the biggest struggles I have as an activist who kind of cut her teeth in academia is that I don't identify with academia at all. I'm constantly frustrated by the disconnect between theory and practice. And so for me, I count my successes by the practicalities. So the MISG project succeeded, and there is now, you know, a women's and gender studies class in the Ontario high school curriculum. Carleton University now has a sexual assault center. The city of Ottawa is now talking about street harassment. OC Transpo, which is Ottawa's public transit authority, are being forced to address the lack of safety for women and marginalized people on public transit. You know, at one point, the Ottawa hospital was turning women away for rape kits. We mobilized around that, and they had to reverse their policies and had to hire new staff. So for me, when I look back on the work I've been doing, what I'm proud of is that I can literally show people what feminism looks like and what feminist activism can result in. It can mean that your kid now goes to high school and learns about the difference between gender and sex. I mean, that's amazing. Your kid can go to Carleton, and if they're sexually assaulted, they're going to be supported around that. To me, that's how we should be measuring our successes, because these things are possible. What we're doing is tangible work, and it can result in tangible results. For me, feminism is very practical. It's a lens. It's the lens in which I view the world. It's the lens in which I look at gender relations. I am absolutely fascinated by the concept of gender and the way in which I think it absolutely drives so much of what we do and so much of which we think is quote unquote human nature. And so for me, feminism is anyone who views the world through the lens of understanding gender and questioning gendered assumptions, and anyone who views the world through the understanding that we don't live in a world that's equitable, and that's not okay, and I'm going to do something about it. I think feminism is a group of movements, plural, and not a singular movement. And I think people can choose to identify as a feminist whether or not I agree that they are or not. I think we have to shed the idea that there is a singular movement. I think that's the first thing we need to do. We need to recognize that we supposedly want a movement that's decentralized, that has no sole leader. But then we keep coming back to, well, I don't like who's leading this movement, and I don't agree with what they're doing, rather than questioning why we keep perpetuating the idea that one person can speak for all of us. I think that's the first step. We really just have to question, if this is a value that we hold, why are our actions not matching up to it? Why is it that we fight to say, you know, Jessica Valenti does not represent all of feminism or whomever, but then saying Jessica Valenti can represent a form of feminism and Mickey Kendall can represent another feminism and Sui Park and whomever can represent, even Miley Cyrus. You know, Miley Cyrus said she was the feminist of 2013 and people were up in arms about it. I disagree with her feminism, and I wouldn't say, you know, she's a feminist icon by any means, but I think the idea that, well, she can't be a feminist because then she's going to represent all feminists, I think that very notion is absurd. She wants to create her own bizarre feminist, go ahead, whatever, it doesn't impact me. But we get kind of caught in these traps of one person representing all of us. And we just got to shed that idea and say, we can all do our own thing. And at the end of the day, my successes should not be a threat to you. I think we still have a long way to go when it comes to supporting survivors of sexual violence. Right now, I'm answering all these questions from the media about what I think about reintegrating the word rape and the definition of rape into the Canadian Criminal Code. And I think the question and the notion is just incredibly offensive, because it had these people done their research, they would know the reason why rape was removed from the criminal code. And it was solely to encourage survivors of sexual violence to come forward and to report their assaults. And we live in a country in which less than 10% of sexual assaults are reported to the police. And now you want to make that number lower under the guise of being quote unquote tough on crime. I think it's so dangerous. And that really, really concerns me. And the way in which Rehtaeh Parsons and Amanda Todd did not get justice, and the way in which Carol Todd and Glenn Canning, which are Amanda Todd's mother, and Rehtaeh Parsons' father, and the fact that they still experience harassment from folks both online and offline, we have a lot of work to do to reconcile our relationship to sexuality in this country and the way in which that's manifested in how we treat survivors of sexual violence. That really, really concerns me. And the way in which the anti-choice movement is co-opting this language of caring about gender equality to attack abortion rights. So saying sex selective abortion is something that's absolutely horrific and we need to stop it. And I want to stop it because I care about women, which is just completely, it's just nonsense. But people are listening to it. And that really concerns me. And I think that's two areas in which they are symptoms of a larger problem. Like, they're both blatant examples of misogyny, and how that misogyny is quite explicit. I am so encouraged by two of the groups that I work with. So the Hullaback movement is right now my absolute soul food. I get up in the morning and I have the drive to keep going because I know I can rely on the folks within the Hullaback movement. And I get sort of emotional just thinking about it because I joined the Hullaback movement at a time when I was, now looking back, really burnt out and really exhausted from working and doing that work at Carleton University. And the Hullaback movement, I mean, we're in 71 cities around the world. You know, we're on 5 continents. We are working with hundreds of people on the ground to address street harassment around the world. And it is such a healthy movement because it's built on the premise that people on the ground know what's best for them. And it's a totally decentralized leadership. And so the vast majority of people who are running a chapter are typically understood as marginalized folks who would not take up positions of leadership in other areas and would not even be offered positions of leadership. And so I think that comes out in the way in which the movement is critical and we're critical of each other and we challenge each other. I mean, it's not kumbaya by any means, and we're definitely coming at it from different angles and different experiences. But that level of support and that level of I've got your back and I support you, and you know, it's just phenomenal. And I think it's a model that should be replicated elsewhere because it's working both tangibly and intangibly. And it makes me want to get up in the morning and keep doing it. And in terms of my reproductive justice work, I was one of the folks who founded a group called the Radical Handmaids, and we're the satirical group that came out because of Motion 312, which was an anti-choice motion to redefine when quote-unquote human life begins in the criminal code. And instead of falling back on traditional organizing of having a protest, maybe a march, some petitions, we said we got to light a fire under people's asses and get them out and do something different and do something creative. So we satirized the anti-choice movement by dressing up like nuns from, you know, The Handmaid's Tale, and by telling funny songs and just mocking the movement. And it was really successful, and Motion 312 was defeated. And we experienced this kind of groundswell of people saying that we felt like a breath of fresh air to people, because it was like, I'm doing pro-choice work, but I'm not feeling like it's the humdrum same old, and that we can be creative in doing activism. And that to me is so refreshing, and I feel refreshed when I do that work. I'm angry and I'm fighting for access to abortion and I'm pissed off about it, but I'm doing it in such a way that people are move to want to join it rather than being turned off. And that is really encouraging. The biggest thing that I tell young people who want to do this work, and not even young, but young to the movement, is if you see a gap, occupy it. Like, if you see something that needs to get done and you think someone should really do something about that, be that someone. I had no idea what the heck I was doing. I don't come from a background of people who you know, have the theory and the fancy words and the jargon, but I just thought, you know what, I can try. I mean, no one's doing anything about it. The worst I can do is, you know, I'll just try. And that to me is what folks should be doing. And I think it can be done. And, you know, those four women who thought, I'm in my first year of women's studies class, and why'd I have to pay $5,000 to learn about this stuff? Everyone should have access to this information. They started the Miss G Project. And my hope is that generations after me would never even question, like, it would be bizarre to them that you'd have to fight to get women's studies in the curriculum, because it's just something I take along with math and English. And that was because folks said, I'm gonna just take a stab at it and try. And that's really my biggest piece of advice to people who want to get involved in activism, is find whatever drives you, good or bad. I mean, I was motivated by anger, and I think that's okay. And maybe you're motivated by excitement about something, and this is something that you're passionate about, or maybe this is something you're pissed off about. Whatever it is, just take a stab at it and just try and do something different. And if it doesn't work, then learn from that and pick yourself up and keep going. But if you see that gap, occupy it.
That was feminist organizer Julie Lalonde. To find out more about the projects Julie is involved in, follow the links in the description. Want to know more about the Hollow Back movement, supporting survivors, and creative activism? Go to www.rabble.ca/toolkit. Anyone with a rabble.ca account can add, edit, or suggest tools. Thanks for listening to Rad Voices. Stay solid.